is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. When it comes to artificial intelligence or AI, the warnings are getting louder and are starting to come from within the industry. Just last week, Sam Altman, the CEO of the laboratory that developed ChatGPT, testified before a congressional subcommittee and urged lawmakers to regulate AI. And earlier this month, a man known as the godfather of AI, Jeffrey Hinton, resigned from Google and is now warning that the race to build AI could be careening towards danger. Today, we're going to talk about what President Biden has termed the enormous potential and enormous danger of AI and look at the future of the technology. Joining me now to do just that are Entrust IT cybersecurity consultant Dave Hatter. Welcome back, Dave.
Thanks for having me on, Lucy.
And University of Cincinnati College of Arts and Sciences Assistant Professor of Biology, LaTanya Jackson, PhD. Thanks for being here, LaTanya.
Thanks for having me.
The University of Cincinnati is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Do you have questions or concerns about where AI is headed? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Dave, as I read that introduction about these kind of warnings from within the industry, your head was nodding vigorously. What do you make of all this? What does that tell you about where we are with AI and what needs to happen next?
Well, Lucy, you know, I've got roughly 30 years in the business, 25 years as a software engineer, and the last 5 to 10-ish, you know, more focused on security. And so I deal with this stuff all the time, worked extensively with ChatGPT as one particular instance of this. And, you know, there's a lot of hyperbole out there. I also think there's a lot of hype. When you look at any new technology, a lot of the stuff they say is, you know, a lot of hype. But I think we have kind of hit a precipice here where the technology is advancing so rapidly now. And when you hear some of these more dire predictions, like Dr. Hinton, I mean, the guy won the Turing Award. That is like the pinnacle of awards you can get for computer science. There have been some other high-level Google people who've warned about this, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, et cetera. So I think these warnings need to be taken seriously, and I think, you know, government regulation is probably something that needs to happen because I don't think there's any existential threat of Terminators walking down the street and wiping us out.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it going there right away.
The next week or so.
Yeah.
You know, I think whether it's cybercrime and fraud, I think you're going to see a wave of that because of these voice cloning technologies and so forth. People are going to lose their jobs, and I'm not sure you're going to see an offsetting amount of new jobs created from these technologies. And then, you know, when you get further out and some of these more extreme predictions, you know, could there was a guy from Google, I can't remember his name now, but another high-level Google guy who used terms like, quoted terms like, AI could see humans as scum and they could create killing machines. Now, this is not Dave Hatter's opinion.
Yeah.
This is someone from Google that's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah,
so,
that's not comforting, Dave.
No, it's not.
Well, you were talking about fraud. Just Monday, I saw a news report out of China that explained how a perpetrator used sophisticated deepfake technology to swap his face and trick his victim into believing his friend needed money, and the friend sent all this money. It seems like there are new tricks all the time, new advancements that people with bad intentions are using.
So when you look at a lot of this generative AI, there's artificial general AI, which is AI that in theory would be able to do anything a human could do. And that we're not there yet. Most of this stuff is really has a narrow focus on doing one thing, like generating copy, like ChatGPT, or art, like Stable Diffusion or something. But because these tools are extremely good, and if I encourage people, if you've not tried them, many of these things are free or very low cost. You need to go see for yourself how capable they are. So recently worked on something with John Matarese, where he called me up. We did a thing. He came over. We spent about 30 minutes in total. We recorded his voice using a free tool called Coqui. Okay. We played with a little bit. We purposely didn't try to like make it perfect, just to show that with limited knowledge, limited skill, and freely available resources, he got the model trained, and then I typed in, "Hello, Grandma, this is John. I need help," trying to play off what you just described, the grandparent scam. And I got to tell you, if you know John Matarese's voice, he's pretty well known in Cincinnati. I don't think you would think it's not him if you got that as a voicemail. It's that good, and that was with, you know, again, 30 minutes maybe of working on it. It's amazing what this stuff can do, and a little terrifying at the same time.
No kidding. John Matarese, my former coworker at WCPO9, the consumer reporter, and has a very distinctive voice.
He does.
It's a good thing you have such good intentions, Dave Hatter. LaTanya, I do want to talk a little bit about how AI can be helpful. How do you use AI in your research at UC?
So AI can be helpful, not just for my research, but in scientific research in general. Like AI actually helps us to monitor chemicals and contaminants in the water, for instance, through sensors. It helps us to see whether ice sheets are melting and at which rate. It also helps us to determine like concentrations of contaminants in the water. Personally, I do aquatic toxicology, so I'm all about contamination and toxins and everything else. So for me, that's how it helps. And it also helps me to put all the data that I generate into one area and also to be able to do models and certain things from that area to see how these contaminants may flow, you know, how fast they may go, what happens if there's a rain event, a flood event, or, you know, some catastrophe, like how are these chemicals going to get in and what's going to be the chemical load? So AI is very helpful for that.
Yeah. Well, and obviously it's great that you have good intentions too, with yes. all you know about water and contaminants and chemicals. How has the AI technology evolved in how you're able to use it in the work you do? I mean, how has it changed or improved over time since you've been using it to do all this stuff?
Right. Well, just in a short period of time, like usually you would have to go out and get the samples, bring them back to the lab and, you know, mix chemicals to be able to put them in a machine and run it and do this and that and see how much of the chemical that you're looking for or the contaminant you're looking for is there and to even identify it as being there. Well, now the AI just within the past few years, like I can put a sensor out in the water and have it there at all times and just monitor the sensor through the computer in my lab. And it's like, oh, okay. For instance, if it's estrogens, like if I'm looking at that, it's like, oh, wow, the estrogen levels are high at this date. And I see at what times. So I can see if there's a peak and what's causing the peak, or I could look at the temperature, just everything. It gives me all the information without me having to go out there.
Yeah.
And do it and just get a one time slice of information.
Right. It sounds like a big time saver and allows
yes.
you to get more information in less time than it would take you to do all that travel. So with all those things that it's doing, do you think AI could be helpful when it comes to climate change and studying all that?
Definitely. AI can. AI is actually being used for that now, monitoring the carbon that's in the air and also just looking at the flow of water. And it could also monitor different contaminants that are being used for in certain things that we use every day. For instance, like in some arid climates, we use gray water, which is treated, cleaned sewer water. Mm-hmm. But in certain percentages, well, AI actually can monitor the amount of carbon coming up from there because we even use sludge in the soil. And all of that causes the carbon levels to rise, and AI monitors that in the places where they use them.
Interesting. So, Dave, I want to come back to you for some more doom and gloom now that we've heard some upsides
Dave.
From there you go. Yeah. I was reading about this, and AI seems to be more and more commonly used in medical research, too. But I wonder if there are any dangers involved there when some of these AI systems seem to make up answers and can kind of lie. I mean, lie is a very human term, but they fill in blanks that they don't really know. Is that a problem?
I think it is, Lucy. And, you know, first off, I want to say everything Dr. Jackson said makes sense to me because there is a flip side, and we're using AI to, you know, help customers get better responses. We're trying a system now where AI is like trying to handle some inbound phone calls for some real low-level simple stuff. So there's a potential amazing productivity boost. It helps customers. But of course, the flip side is, does that then eliminate jobs? Could some of those people be repurposed to something else? Maybe. But some of those jobs are not going to come back. And that's another one of the downsides. But to your specific point, you know, if you go back and look at ChatGPT, because that's kind of sucked all the oxygen out of the air on most of this stuff since last year, you know, when it first came out, if you go read their terms of service and read what guys like Sam Altman has had to say about it and Elon Musk, who was one of the original investors, you know, it'll tell you in there very clearly, sometimes it will just literally make up an answer from whole cloth, right? It doesn't give you sources, or it might give you a source that's completely bogus. And if you haven't seen it, and this is, again, one of the more disturbing angles, Jonathan Turley, who's a fairly well-known attorney, was accused by one of these AI platforms of sexual harassment, supposedly at an event he went to that he was never at. So now he's looking at like a defamation lawsuit, but who do you sue? Is it OpenAI? You know, I mean, there's so many different weird angles to this thing. You know, could I be accused of a crime I didn't commit because someone used synthetic media / deepfakes from these tools to make it appear that I committed a crime, or vice versa? Could I use these tools to potentially show that I was somewhere else when I was actually committing a crime? You know, the big thing for me is this is all moving very quickly, and it feels like there's been some sort of fairly major breakthrough in the last year or so, because AI is not new. It's been around, and people have been talking about it since the 50s or 60s. There have been improvements like Deep Blue, the IBM computer that played chess. But again, very narrowly focused on one thing. Now you're seeing these gigantic, you know, increases in power and capability, you know, go out. Did either one of you two happen to catch the story about the drop in the stock market yesterday, because there was an AI generated photo of an attack on the Pentagon
that never happened?
Yeah, it went viral, and all of a sudden the stock market plummeted, and then it turns out, yeah, it wasn't real. So while I think there's a lot of upsides to this, and I think it's clearly demonstrable in many cases, I think, unfortunately, the downsides are a lot greater at this point, because regular folks on the street do not realize what these things are capable of.
Mm. I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about the enormous potential and the enormous potential dangers of AI. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. And we do have a caller on the line. Steve, thank you so much for calling. What is your question or comment?
Well, I guess it's sort of a question/comment. I was listening to a bit on the writer's strike, and one of the things they're negotiating is the use of AI, and what is AI, what is the brain of the AI going to use to generate new material? And if it's using something that a writer wrote, how does that writer get compensated for being, you know, sort of part of the genesis of the AI's new stuff? I don't know if that's come up where this sort of thing has been negotiated before, but I thought that was an interesting angle that I hadn't thought of, and it's being negotiated right now out in Hollywood, I guess.
Yeah.
Question/comment.
Yeah, very interesting, Steve. Thank you. Dave, have you been following that much? I guess this also gets to AI-generated art, that it's borrowing techniques and visions from other artists.
I haven't followed the writer's strike per se, but Steve makes an interesting point, because if you think about it, the way all these large language models like ChatGPT are trained, it's all derivative of other people's work, right? And then it's using a statistical model to put things together. Now, again, you can try it, and you'll get some crazy results sometimes, but I asked it, like, for Valentine's Day, write my wife a poem. And it
did
was way
really?
Better than, yeah, it was way better than anything I could have came up with. I tried to tell her I didn't. She's like, I know you didn't do that. You know? But, you know, I've used it to do all kinds of different things, write blog posts. And, you know, a lot of times it's not going to give you something that's 100%, but it might be 85, 90%, tweak it a little bit. Well, who owns the copyright to that? And to Steve's point, there's a lawsuit right now with an artist who created a comic book and used these sorts of technologies for it. Well, the court, so as I understand it, has basically come back and said, none of the copy you can copyright, only the images that you created.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's the whole legal ramifications of all of this are going to get totally wild. And honestly, I don't know why you would ever hire a professional writer again, because if you use the latest version of ChatGPT, it's so good that it'll, again, you're probably going to get 80 to 90% top-notch quality most of the time, and then just tweak it.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's...
As someone with a writing background, that really hurts my feelings.
I'm sure,
but
it does,
yeah. Thank you so much for that call, Steve. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the show, we'll hear about a summer program teaching local teens about entrepreneurship. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our discussion about the potential and perils of artificial intelligence. My guests are Entrust IT cybersecurity consultant Dave Hatter and University of Cincinnati College of Arts and Sciences Assistant Professor of Biology LaTanya Jackson, PhD. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. LatanyaWeiss.org. LaTanya, we were talking before the break about the various ways that you use this AI technology very successfully as a scientist. I guess I wonder, as a scientist, what, if any, guardrails do you think should be built around these systems?
Well, the one thing, a guardrail around the systems is that if there's like blank spaces, sometimes the AI will fill in those spaces. And the problem with that as a scientist is that you're looking for quantitative data, right? So if something's not there, it's just not there. And so guardrails around that would be something that would be very useful, because if the AI is putting in data that's not there, it's just looking at, you know, using the statistics of what's there already and it's adding in, then that causes a problem,
sure,
you know, with your data. But also, there needs to be some type of guardrails, too, for, let's say, for those. It has pitfalls. So what I mean by that is, as a scientist, we get the data, we analyze the data, you know, we write up reports or for publication. Well, if AI can just write up the reports, right, then how, you know, how do we know what is AI generated and what is actually generated from the scientists themselves?
Gotcha.
Know? So that could potentially be an issue. I don't know of that happening personally, but at the rate we're going, I could see that happening.
Yeah. So you want to see if there's a way to make sure there's an actual human scientist,
yes,
who is analyzing this data, double checking it, verifying it, drawing conclusions, instead of having the AI just kind of take the next step. Oh, I gathered all this data. This is what it means.
Yes, exactly. Because that could have very bad effects on the human population and environment itself in general.
Sure. So, Dave, how commonplace do you expect AI to become in business? I guess I'm wondering, do you think it'll catch on faster than the internet did for a lot of businesses? We all remember all those businesses like, I don't need a computer, you know. What's a website? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, Lucy, I'm old enough to have lived through that time. I remember it very well.
I do, too.
I think it's already catching on like fire. I mean, if you look at just how quickly ChatGPT got to 100 million users, as far as I know, it holds the record at this point. And, you know, that was obviously the free version. But even if you upgrade to the more slightly more costly paid for version, you know, I think as soon as people, especially like white collar job type people that work in an office, have the opportunity to interact with these tools, they're probably going to see two things. A, this could take my job someday if I don't figure out how to use it to be more productive and leverage it to help me do better at whatever I do. And then that second piece, I mean, there's so many different ways, whether it's the text generating type things like ChatGPT or the art generating things. You know, there's so many different ways you can leverage these. Again, I hate to say things like this because it's disturbing to people, but I don't know why you would hire a writer at this point. I really don't know why you'd hire a graphic designer unless you just need someone, because like I'm like total, whatever side of the brain is the non-artistic side, I got all of that. So, you know, I can't even put things together and make them look good, but I could generate a bunch of graphics and then get someone to just kind of stitch it together, you know? So things like that, I think anyone that's in a sort of a creative job, especially if you're in a job like an accountant where you have to follow certain rules and it's all like just a rote set of things you have to do, I think you should be worried that this is going to replace you eventually. And then to add some extra fun in, have you seen the Tesla robots or like the Boston Dynamics robots?
No.
Go check these things out if you haven't seen what they're capable of. Imagine if it could think with the level of capability of these tools. I mean, I predict we will eventually be at a place where you would have a robot plumber who can come in your house and fix your leaky pipe. Now, I don't think that's going to happen in the next couple of years, but it almost is inevitable that this is going to happen unless something, like we get EMP'd and every computer is wiped out or something, you know,
yeah,
sunspot or something.
I want the record to reflect I do not want a robot plumber.
I don't either, Lucy.
I don't think human plumber
I don't
to deal
either
with my plumbing issues. Do you think it's inevitable that businesses will adopt this? Is it one of these things that where, hey, my competition is using AI for X, Y, and Z, I better jump on that too?
I think it's going to be an existential threat for a lot of businesses that don't, because the businesses that figure out how to make it work, especially for the stuff that's free or very low cost, I think you're going to see it'll just like literally an exponential jump in their capabilities and the ability to provide more for less than the folks that, you know, if you go back to like the days of the shovel, yeah, could I get 10 guys with shovels to dig a hole in your yard, or could I wheel in with a backhoe and do the same amount of work in probably a tenth of the time and maybe for less money? So, I mean, I think that's where we're at with these tools, and businesses that don't figure out how to leverage them are going to be at a significant disadvantage.
Mm. LaTanya, from a scientific perspective, this is something we haven't talked about, but what, if any, concerns do you have about bias when it comes to the information and answers that AI generates? There's been a lot of talk about that. I don't know how much it is an impact has an impact in your field specifically, but I know there's been a lot of concern about just the kind of bad information in and bad information comes out of these AI systems.
For what I do, I haven't seen that because, you know, in science, we're supposed to be objective, right? So the data is just the data, and I'm not doing data on human subjects. But I have read a lot of articles where the AI information that especially having to do with underrepresented people and me being one myself. It's like, yeah, it doesn't even have good face recognition for us. It doesn't have like a lot of the old data that we have for people that don't belong, you know, to underrepresented populations. So I do think that could be detrimental to people like me, because if the information is not in there right, like we could really get, as was said before, I mean, we could get things about us that's not true. And then now it's all out into the world. And then you come to find out like, oh, my God, this is not really true. But AI is just going on what they're getting in.
Sure.
And who's putting it in there. Right.
Right.
And
well, and even some of these stories that are a little bit dated at this point about algorithms and AI that companies use to sort through resumes. And I think, didn't Amazon get in trouble for an AI system that said, oh, all coders should be men? You know, I mean, there are a lot of systems that make assumptions based on the data that's fed into them.
Yeah, I think the bias thing is a real problem, not only the facial recognition, but just in general, because, you know, if there's implicit bias, even if no one is purposely doing it, if there's implicit bias in the data, you're potentially going to draw the wrong conclusions, right? Mm-hmm. And as a guy who spent 25 years writing software, you know, I can tell you, I made a lot of mistakes. I've seen, you know, programs that did not operate correctly, which is one of the reasons why you won't be riding in any autonomous vehicles anytime soon.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you look at the bias question, I think it's a major problem because the data is full of bias. You know, did the programmers maybe, build some bias into it that they didn't even intend to do? Who knows? And I think one of the scariest things about all of this AI stuff, again, going back to Google, you know, they have documented examples where, like, they built AI systems that suddenly like generated its own language and they're not really sure how it happened. So it's like, okay, if the people that built it can't explain it and it can't explain how it got there, what does that really mean? I don't know. That's very disturbing to me.
Yeah. I don't like that story. So
sorry.
I read that story. Yeah. That is pretty scary.
It's pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Dave, what should we be most worried about and watching for when it comes to AI?
Well, I would encourage everyone, and I probably told you this before, Lucy, there's a great book called Superintelligence by Nick Bostrom. For people that are interested in artificial intelligence and where all this is going, it's a fascinating book. He doesn't make any real predictions. He just lays out a bunch of scenarios about how this could play out over time. So I'd encourage people to check that out. But I think the most immediate threat, honestly, is the potential for crime and fraud related to this technology and the ability to spoof people in ways that they don't even know are a thing, like the voice cloning. You know, there's a bank in the UAE that lost $35 million in a very elaborate phishing, spoofing, social engineering scam that involved voice cloning. You know, there was a voicemail left from a, quote, director of the bank authorizing this transfer of funds. I'm telling you, that is going to be a gigantic problem. The technology exists right now, and we're starting to see these stories. But until average people say, I need to understand that anything I see, anything I hear, anything I watch could be spoofed, I think you're just going to see people being defrauded like crazy.
Mm. My mother always told me, don't trust anybody, not even your mother. I didn't know whether to believe her.
She's right. Now, anyway.
Yeah. So, LaTanya, how much more human do you think this technology could get? And do we want that? I mean, would it be helpful for the work that you do to have AI become even more kind of human-like in what it can do and interpret and see and understand?
I mean, there could be some benefit to that, but I see more pitfalls to that because of the fact that, you know, AI doesn't think like humans, and there are things that happen as a scientist, when you're, whether you're in a field or in a lab, you're doing experiments, and things just don't always go right. And especially when you're working with animals, so what is AI going to do when something just all of a sudden happens that doesn't normally happen, right? And it could just kind of kill a whole project, which could cost thousands and in some cases millions of dollars. And that's all just gone, you know, due to that. But how much more human I think they're going to get it? Obviously, from what we've been talking about, it seems like they're going to get more and more human-like. But I don't think that, at least in, and for what I do specifically, that it can replace all humans. It'll replace like some things that we have to do out in the field and some other things like that. But it would have to get a lot better for that. But I think that the pitfalls at this point are higher than the benefits would be.
Dave, what do you think? I mean, do we even want that? And should, you know, I know that during this testimony before that congressional subcommittee, there was talk about, should you have the right to be informed as a consumer or a human being if you're being, if you're interacting with AI instead of, you know, another human?
So going back to your guardrails question, Lucy, I think that would be one of the things. I mean, again, I agree with Dr. Jackson. I think the pitfalls outweigh the benefits in general for society at this point, especially because this is moving very quickly and the toothpaste is out of the tube. You're not going to put it back.
I do think
there needs to be some kind of regulation that would say, you know, you're dealing with an AI. I just saw a story this morning before I left. Wendy's is now looking at working on, with ChatGPT and some custom programming they've done, replacing all of the people who take your order at Wendy's. You'll literally be talking to like a chatbot and it'll all be AI driven. So again, it's the job thing, but it's also, you know, how would you know that you're talking to a computer? And that's, again, without getting too nerdy on you, the Turing test, right? That's the test of artificial intelligence. Can you have a conversation with a computer and it fool you into believing it's human? Mm. And I'm not sure we're quite there yet, but we're getting very, very close. And yeah, the idea that you're talking to a computer and don't know it, I don't think that's good. I don't know how that could be good. Maybe I'm just old fashioned, no. But I don't know. You know, it's a little concerning to me.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Entrust IT cybersecurity consultant Dave Hatter, who is always a ray of sunshine, and University of Cincinnati College of Arts and Sciences assistant professor of biology, LaTanya Jackson, PhD. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear about a summer program that teaches local teens about entrepreneurship. This is Cincinnati Edition.